Radio Free Palmer, 89.5 KVRF, presents Mushing Radio, hosted by Robert Porto. Mushing Radio is about dog-powered sports, living in the Great White North, and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Here is your host, Robert Porto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Porto, and you're listening to Mushing Radio on KVRF FM in Palmer and the Matsu Valley. And tonight we're continuing our Iditarod Musher series. We have on the line, calling in from Cantwell, I believe, Mike Santos, Iditarod Musher. How's it going, Mike?
Very good. How are you, Robert?
Very good. Thank you. Tell us about yourself. Are you in Cantwell? Where do you live? That sort of thing. Just a little short bio, then we'll jump right into the show.
No, I'm sitting on my deck looking over the dog yard, and we live in Cantwell, and that's I don't leave Cantwell very often.
And how long have you lived in those parts?
We've been in Denali for 8 years now. We've bought this piece of property a little over 5 years ago. It's one of the oldest homesteads still around. Actually belonged to a fellow by the name of John Rumor, who was a park ranger back in 1930. So we spent the last 5 or 6 years sort of revamping the place.
Well, you know, we've covered you guys since the end of Iditarod. We've had a guest on every week, and a lot of them are saying that that's one heck of a place to do some training up there in that Cantwell area. How is it to train during the winter? What are the conditions like? What are the trails like? That sort of thing.
Yeah, it's absolutely paradise. My wife had sent me to Alaska probably a little over 10 years ago now, shopping for dogs was my first trip, and I actually got stuck in Cantwell for 3 days. Got to know quite a few of the locals, and was convinced by day two that this was home. Called the wife and said, hey, let's make arrangements because we're moving. So snow is we usually get snow earlier and it stays later than most other places in the state. I have yet to see it rain here once the snow starts to fly, and we usually get tons of it. So it's probably the in my opinion the best place in the world to train sled dogs.
Well, you know, a lot of people that listen to our show obviously aren't in Alaska, and they love to hear about that Alaska lifestyle, and they love to hear about how far we are away from things, how remote we are as mushers. What in the world's near where you live up there in Cantwell? How far is it to the grocery store, that sort of thing?
I'd say it's a little over 150 miles. Closest, amenities, not just the grocery store, but just about everything else is in Fairbanks. Wasilla being just a little bit further than Fairbanks to us. That's definitely closest everything. My mom and dad came up to visit quite a few years ago, and it took her about 6 days before she finally stopped asking me, where can I run and get this? Where can I run and get that? And I just kept saying, Fairbanks, Ma, Fairbanks. And, like I said, after about a week, she finally gave up asking. But
so it makes it a little far for that midnight ice cream fix, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you have to be a little bit more organized when you live this far away from town, for sure. That's kind of the way we feel about the place. It's probably about as remote as you can get and still be on the road system. So it is nice that we can actually get to town, but it is a long day for sure.
Well, I definitely want to get in and talk about your kennel, talk about Iditarod a little bit. But before we get into that, what do you do in the off season? Do you work? Do you have something going on? Speaking tours, that sort of thing. What do you guys do in the summer months?
My wife teaches school in the winter, so thankfully we do have some income throughout the winter besides what we do with dogs. And I have done just about everything you can imagine to pay for dog food over the years. So,
oh, yeah.
And still continue to do so, primarily construction. And that has sort of tailed off in the last couple of years. This summer, we just started doing kennel tours for the first time. We had a couple last year. So the last couple of years, I've been really working quite hard here at home, just trying to get all the infrastructure that we need up and running so we can get going, this summer and hopefully next summer a little bit more seriously.
In terms of the tours, you mean?
Yes.
A lot of folks do tours, and some people do them a little bit different than others. Some people just do the kennel tour where they're showing the dogs and, petting and that sort of thing. Other people are running on carts and ATVs and that sort of thing. What is your idea of a tour for folks that want to come up and see you, whether it be this year or next?
know, I think we're definitely not doing cart rides. We are definitely more of a kennel tour, where they come, they get to learn about the dogs and how we kind of care for the dogs and what our life's been like over the last 25 years, just kind of living with these dogs. And we also want to include a little bit about the history of the place that they're visiting, and also, as you mentioned, you know, kind of what it's like to live where we live and how far it is to get stuff, and you know, and also what, you know, it is a native village. It's not even an incorporated town, so we also want to include a little bit about, you know, living in a native village that has subsistence rights and what those subsistence rights mean, you know, to folks that live in these kind of places.
Right, right. Is it just you and your wife? Do you have kids? Do you have handlers, employees? What?
Yeah, we do. We definitely could not do what we do without a lot of help, but it is just my wife and I currently. That is subject to change, I guess, without spilling the beans, if you know what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so, yeah, we're looking forward to starting a family here shortly, but, yes, we usually have at least one or two people here all summer helping with dog care and dog training, and then anywhere between two and three people all winter as well.
So we're talking to Mike Santos, Iditarod Musher, finished in 34th place in 2012. Pretty respectable finish, Mike. How did you think the race went for you in this past year?
Yeah, it was great. You know, I really enjoyed it. Dog team was pretty much flawless. I had a whole bunch, at least a half dozen or so yearlings on that team, and just tickled pink that everybody did as well as they did. They ate great, and you know, had lots of spunk everywhere we went, and was really happy with our run times. Wish some of my mistakes anyway, as far as getting lost and getting stuck in Shaq Kulik, might not have been the case, but you know, there's always the future.
You know, a lot of folks, it sounds like, got stuck in Shaq Kulik. What was going on at that checkpoint this year?
You know, when I left the Blueberry Hills and got down there kind of on sea level, you know, wind was definitely whipping, and it was kind of getting late at night, and, you know, temperatures were well below zero, and I'm going to guess 40-plus mile-an-hour winds. Got to Shaq Kulik, and you know, the forecast was it was going to continue, and by the time I had gotten there, it was already kind of a quagmire of dog teams, and, you know, it felt like half the field was kind of stuck there, and, you know, general consensus was that, you know, it was kind of foolish in our position in the world, you know, kind of not being there to win at that point. Just didn't make a whole lot of sense to leave, you know, with the wind just increasing, temperatures getting colder, of course, and it getting dark. So, you know, say big group of folks all decided to kind of shack out and, you know, wait till daylight and see if things got any better.
So other than your hiccup in Shaq Kulik, was the run pretty uneventful in terms of everything else on the trail?
Yeah, you know, I finished with 15 dogs, and that was kind of, you know, the goal from early on was to finish with all 16, given the fact that half my team really didn't have that much race experience. I just wanted to make sure I got a big team of dogs to know them happy and healthy, and like I say, I couldn't be happier with the way they performed and the way they looked when they finished, you know.
And you said you finished with 15?
Yes.
Pretty good there. I know it's tough to finish with that full team, but 15 is you must be doing something right, huh?
Well, like I said, you know, the year before I didn't have such good luck, and I had a really sick dog team right from the get go, and of course I didn't finish. So this year, like I say, I don't necessarily know if I believe in luck or not, but you know, the dog stayed healthy, which I think is huge when you get into Iditarod. It seems like at least a half dozen teams every year just kind of pick up whatever's kind of floating around the trail in the first few days, and that becomes a real challenge to kind of overcome. And like I say, this year they only got stronger as we kind of went.
So, again, we're talking to Mike Santos on Mushing Radio. Iditarod finisher this year, 34th place. How did you get involved with Iditarod? You know, give us a, you know, kind of the run-up in terms of, you know, what you did to get involved with it, maybe some of your earlier races, whether your qualifiers, that sort of thing. A little bit of history behind the Mike Santos dog team.
Yeah. I blame a fellow in the old Christmas cartoon called Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. His name was Yukon Cornelius.
Oh, yeah.
and from the time I saw Yukon Cornelius, I've been kind of fascinated with sled dogs and northern, you know, life and northern travel. And, you know, of course, my folks wouldn't let me collect sled dogs at home. And shortly after I graduated out of high school in 1986, I started collecting sled dogs, and I've sort of been active in the sport ever since. First starting in Western Massachusetts is where I started my kennel, and of course, you know, always sort of dreaming about Alaska, and I did a rod, and it was only until I met my wife that she decided that, you know, kind of gave me the kick and said, well, if we're going to do it, let's do it, and so here we are. And but I did a rod's been something on on my mind for a long, long time.
You know, there's a lot of mushing history over in the New England area. We've had several guests on talking about that. Can you tell us a little bit about that? You know, there's some pretty famous names that wandered through there. Doc Lombard, Leonard Cepulo was through there, Arthur Walden, those type of guys. How much history is still out there in the New England area?
Well, you know, the history, and I feel privileged because I did get to know, you know, a few of those old timers that were still around before I left there. You know, Ed Moody and Norman Vaughn, who also had ties to the Northeast, and Arthur Walden. And like I say, it was sort of a special to know those folks because they were kind of like childhood heroes to me. And as I got going in sled dogs, you know, had the opportunity to meet them all a few times. As far as the history still being active there, you know, there's still an active racing scene. However, you know, with the snow conditions the way they've been in the last, 15, 20 years throughout the lower 48, not just New England, but I'd say New England in particular has been hit pretty hard the last bunch of years where the winters have just gotten so much shorter and snow is a lot less predictable. You know, I think sled dog racing has certainly waned from the days, you know, at one point in time, you know, Laconia, for example, the world championship there was the biggest purse in the sprint racing world and drew, you know, competitors from around the world. So certainly New England has a great history of sled dog racing, including upstate New York. But I believe that has kind of curtailed a little bit over the years, but still quite an active scene back east.
You know, we were talking to Hank DeBruin last week on the radio show, and he lives right outside of Toronto, and he says it's well above 100 down there near Toronto. That's a tough place to be for a musher and his dogs, I think.
Yeah, we haven't seen 80. I think maybe 80 twice, like at 3 in the afternoon here at Cantwell this summer.
So, Mike, let's talk a little bit about your dogs. Where did you first get your first batch of dogs? Do you breed your own? Have you bought some from some famous kennels? How does the line come about?
Well, you know, originally, you know, I started with whatever I could get my hands on, you know, backyard breeders and, you know, the pound and whatever else. But over the years, I've certainly, you know, always kind of had an understanding that genetics was such a big part of what we can do with dogs. It's not just what we can, how we can train them. It's also, you know, what they are. Currently, most of my stuff goes back to Jeff King's older stuff, which goes back to Susan Butcher and Ross Saunderson, is kind of what I've been most successful with, is a, you know, pairings of a dog named Uxie that goes back to Susan Butcher and a dog called Victor out of Ross Saunderson. And since that time, I've pretty much bred my own dog since I got that original breeding stock from Jeff King.
So tell us about your dogs. How many do you have in your yard? You mentioned you ran several yearlings in this year's I Did a Rod. What are you looking for in a dog on your team in terms of attitude and, you know, that sort of thing?
Yeah, you know, I certainly enjoy dogs that enjoy being around me and have a positive outlook on life, almost to a fault. I am a firm believer in that, you know, each and every dog I have, it's gotta be fun to have 365 days a year because we're not racing all the time. So I typically have dogs that are very, very social, very outgoing, energetic, and they like new things. They're not afraid of certain anything that comes up that might be different. Typically, they just go faster, and that's really kind of what the attitude that I look for in the dogs that I breed is just kind of a positive outlook on life, and where strange things or new circumstances just don't faze them. That much.
A lot of talk has been, especially in this off season on this show, about kind of the changing of the outlook on dogs. People say these days that they're going more towards that husky looking dog again versus that hound that was so popular earlier in this in this decade. How do you feel about that, or where is your stance on the terms of what the dogs are doing today?
You know, I really don't think there's really much difference in what anybody's doing. I think what everybody seems to have gotten caught up in is doing what has been successful for somebody else, and that has historically always been a mistake. And have the dogs changed because of it? Possibly. Has people's strategies changed because of it? Possibly. One of the things that I really enjoy about being where I am is I really don't have a whole lot of sort of connections in the dog meshing world. So I'm sort of privileged a little bit just not to really know what's going on and what people are doing and how they're training and what kind of dogs are doing what. And I think it's allowed me to sort of just focus on what I have here and what they're doing and what my dogs particularly enjoy doing. And I think that's really the only way to incorporate a successful mushing style. I know, like I say, currently it seems to be the norm to do these enormously long runs at a little slower pace. And like I say, some folks have been really successful at it, but I don't think I have to necessarily follow that lead in order to do well.
So can you talk a little bit about that? Some mushers really hold that close to the vest, and they don't like to mention what their particular style is or their run-rest schedule, that sort of thing. Do you have a set thing going out, this is what we're going to do, this is how we're going to do it, or you just kind of just see how the conditions work for you?
Yeah, no, I am probably the least formatted person you can possibly imagine. I try as hard as possible not to have too much of a strategy. I try to just most of the time just kind of pay attention to what dogs are telling me and try to judge off what they're doing and what they're feeling like as far as what, my next run is going to be like.
Right, right. Tell us a little bit about the race this year. Again, talking to Mike Santos, 34th place, respectable finish for sure. You said you were happy with that finish. Finishing with 15 dogs is definitely something to be proud of. How did the race go for you from start to finish in terms of what you saw in your dogs? I know you mentioned that they did very well, but did you see them developing since they were so young, as you mentioned, as yearlings? Did you see anybody on that team really come of age during this year's race?
I was just floored because most of the young dogs I did have were just outstanding, and I don't know if they necessarily got more mature or not. I was just kind of blown away by their capabilities, just period. And like I say, I think I had just as talented of a team, if not more so, the year before. Just everybody was healthy, and I think our speeds were just phenomenal. They were just really moving easy. Nobody looked like they were really working that hard, and it was really a nice looking team, more so than one dog particularly sort of standing out. I was able to run probably about 10 different dogs up front throughout the Iditarod, and that certainly made me happy. And like I say, it was a fairly challenging year. I don't have the experience that a lot of folks do. Can't tell you firsthand that the storm this year was, worse than the storm 10 years ago or whatever. But there was plenty of varying conditions, a lot of wind, a lot of cold, a lot of drifted in trail, and so I think we've seen quite a bit of different type of trail, and dogs did great on all of it.
There's always talk about the musher being the weak link of the team. What did you learn about yourself, about the trail, about the race itself, that out there on the trail this year that you didn't know previous?
I don't. That's a good question. I don't think I have a good answer, except for the fact that maybe my doctor's right and my vision ain't so good, because I did get lost a couple of times out there once for a long period of time. So maybe I do have to figure out some way to see a little bit better. But it's always for me. Anytime I'm with dogs, whether it's racing or out training, and I'm out for a couple of days or 2-3 days, I think it's something that happens to all dog mushers. We just kind of get into a bubble, if you will, where you know everything is so condensed, concentrated on just you and this dog team, and what's happening with that dog team, and what you have to do to take care of that dog team. And that's kind of why I call it the bubble. And I'm really comfortable in that bubble, so I enjoy it. I cherish. Like I say, once you've been out there long enough, where everything else kind of just takes a back seat, if you will, the rest of life's challenges and things like cell phones and whatnot. And like I say, so I'm fairly comfortable in those situations, and I truly enjoy, the time out there with the dog. So, I guess if I learned anything, then once you sleep a little bit after it's over, you just can't wait to do it again. So.
That's a great lead into my next question that was proposed to me this week on Facebook. One of my followers asked, and I haven't had the privilege to do Iditarod yet. I'm still doing my qualifiers, hope to finish them this year and run the following year. But a person asked me, how can it be fun for you guys out there? And obviously, I didn't have an answer. I only have a 300-mile race under my belt in terms of whether it's fun or not. Can you answer that for the fans out there that have that question? How can it be fun out there, for 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 days in the worst conditions on Earth? Tell us about that a little bit.
Well, I don't necessarily, I wouldn't even say that it's fun. I wouldn't say that, certainly not all of it is fun. I think it's ultimately rewarding more so than just fun. Right now I have close to 70 dogs. Every single one of them was born and raised here. So every dog that I'm racing has been born here, and it's been last 5 to 7 years. Of sort of working to put this team together, even in the most challenging weather conditions, or when you're really, really tired and sleep deprived, I think that rewarding feeling of actually doing something like this, having invested so much time, energy, even resources, is really what kind of makes it special. But I don't necessarily think there's definitely moments out there when you're freezing your back end off. I wouldn't say it's necessarily fun. And then the flip side to it is I think it might also be fairly common that if you were to ask somebody, halfway through one of these long distance races, are you going to do it again next year? They'd probably tell you no flipping way, And as soon as you get like a night's sleep, like I say, it just, you instantly, I don't know what it is, but you get 6 hours of sleep or 7 hours of sleep after the race is over, and you instantly start thinking about every little decision you had made along the way, and you've slept, you have a clear idea of maybe I should have done this or I could have done that and that would have been better. So it's sort of a perpetual sickness in that regard as far as doing the Iditarod. The goal is to always, of course, do it a little better. And as soon as, like I say, you get a little sleep, you instantly have a bunch of really good ideas that you didn't have a few days ago. So that's all you do is spend the rest of the year thinking about doing it again.
You mentioned earlier, Mike, about your wife, and she was kind of one of those decisions that said, hey, we're going to go. If you want to do this, we got to go. Is she a musher? What is she involved with in terms of the sport? Does she do racing? Is she just helping you out? What's the deal with her?
She has done a little bit of mid-distance racing back east before we moved up here. She hasn't had as much time on the runners in the past 3 or 4 years anyway, but she still does help train and raise the dogs. And, her and I are sort of, one's the right hand and one's the left hand. And half the time, I swear the two of us are working 24/7 for some third party who happens to run this dog team. And that's the reality of it. Like I say, the two of us together are, kind of the coach and master of the Wolf's Den Kennel. I just happen to be the driver, and I know I've heard John Baker talk about Team Baker in the same way, and he's just a lucky son of a gun who happens to be the driver, but that he could not do it without the infrastructure and the people around him, and that's exactly what's going on here.
And to equate it to another sport, very similar to NASCAR, you got to have that support crew back there.
Absolutely.
You got to have the folks that make the booties and everything, huh?
Yeah, especially in the spouse department. But no, like I say, there is not one decision that we make that isn't a, you know, a team decision. I mean, that's kind of what we do, you know, decide everything from who we're going to breed to what we're going to feed to what races we're going to go to. Like I say, it's definitely the two of us.
Well, Mike, we're again talking to Mike Santos tonight on Mushing Radio. I have two more questions for you, and then if you have anything else to mention, go for it. We have about 4 minutes left. My first question is, what's the plan for 2013? Are you planning on running Iditarod, or what's going on?
I would absolutely love to, and I'm not going to say that it's totally off the table at this point, but we do have a few things that need to kind of fall in line if it's going to happen.
Sure.
But if we don't go to 2013, I'll be there for sure in 2014.
And my last question I like to ask all of you guys every week, to give one piece of advice to the aspiring musher out there, whether it's the guy that has two or three dogs that, you know, that hooks them up to the run around the park, or that guy who's deciding to jump into this and, you know, move to Alaska and do what so many of us have done. What is that one piece of advice you can give to those guys?
Yeah, don't do it. Go to law school.
That's the best one so far.
Like my brother, he's the smart one. But no, I think, you know, the number one thing I think of when I think of dogs and the time I've had with dogs is, one, just have fun. That's the big thing you know, it just costs so much, not only money and time, but our energy, and it eats up our entire lives. And if it's not fun, you really got to start rethinking kind of where you're headed. So that's number one. And I think one of the ways that I've always enjoyed, have had a lot of fun, and there's been, you know, now there's many facets of the sport that I really, really enjoy outside of racing. But I think, you know, paying attention to your dogs and, like I say, taking care of your dogs better than anybody else, and just getting a good working relationship with the dogs that you have, usually will ensure that you are having some fun.
If I can just delve into that just for a second, Mike, you mentioned spending time with your dogs. Give our listeners kind of an idea about how much time you spend with your dogs, maybe in the summer versus the winter and so forth.
Yeah, you know, the summertime, certainly, you know, I have a lot of things that I'm involved in right at the moment, so I don't get as much time per day with my dogs, but I do, like I say, have a couple of people here that are doing everything from walking puppies on a daily basis to taking puppies out on free runs and training dog teams, and I'm in and out kind of both of those people's day, if you will. So I would say anywhere between, you know, 4 and 6 hours a day. And I wouldn't say necessarily hands-on being involved with the dogs, but sort of coaching people that are here helping. And that's something I do enjoy. I do enjoy teaching, so I certainly enjoy having them around and watching people progress. Winter time, you know, it is pretty much a 24/7 deal once the middle of November shows up. We are often out on multi-day training trips, and when the dogs are home, we have a dog barn, so we put them in at night. I typically will spend anywhere between an hour and a half in the dog barn after the dogs are in for the night, which is usually around 9 o'clock when we put them in. So, again, there are some days when, you know, activities might not be quite so intense, but the good majority of our winter is spent with the dogs for sure.
Very cool. Mike, we have about a minute left. Anything you want to mention before we go?
No, I think you got it covered. I hope you got lots of listeners, and I hope to see everybody down in Iditarod, I guess, this year.
Very cool. Talking to Mike Santos. Mike, website, what is your website address so people can find you?
Yeah, it's www.wolfsdenkennel.com, and, of course, I'm on Facebook and LinkedIn and YouTube channel, all the rest of that fun stuff. And we don't have our business website up yet, but it will be up shortly, and that is Doggone It Tours.
Very cool. I'll pass along some links and send you over a link to the show probably sometime tomorrow, if that's okay.
That'd be great.
Very cool. Mike Santos, Iditarod finisher, 34th place in 2012. It's been a pleasure. We'll talk again soon, okay?
Thank you a bunch, Robert.
Thank you. And this has been Robert Forto on behalf of Mushing Radio. We'll talk to you guys next time. Goodbye.